Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
4-1-F for the 3DS, it finally has died after all these years. Like, jeez, it's been 9 years since its first birth, and it finally closed down production. A bloody time.
Yeah, it's long overdue, and we'll be talking about that
more. About bloody time? No, I missed the 3DS. Rest in peace. What a great console.
We're gonna get to it. All right. I think we can all, and we all talked about this on the podcast a long time ago, but like the 3DS needed to die so that they could focus more on the Switch. Because there was a time when they were doing both, and it was like you could just tell it was hurting. It was like, why?
That's true. Like, but it's like, been dead for a while now.
It has.
And just to hear Will say about bloody time, and 3DS deserves better than that. It deserves respect.
Yeah, put some respect on its name, Will. And obviously defending the honor of the 3DS is Tellius Tyler.
Yes, and also trying to pre-order a PS5. I'm following Mario 64's updates. I failed many times today, but there is a chance that on the air I will be successful. So,
this should be a sign, Tyler, that you shouldn't do it while you're on a Nintendo podcast.
You don't have to tell me that. Tell Will that. Tell Mr. Been playing this PlayStation game this week. You know, this is a special circumstance for me.
It was different when we were ordering the Switch during the reveal presentation.
Right,
at
right,
the Nintendo
right, right,
system.
Right.
Okay, we were all trying to get ahead of the game and we succeeded. So, that was different, but you're buying a competitor's system. What the frick?
And right, last I checked, I think the entire bundle is almost to $1,000. I mean, yeah. It's comparison to the Switch release the last I checked.
What are the, I didn't watch the presentation for various reasons, but what are the launch titles for the PS5?
Okay, last I checked, I believe, there is going to be the Dark Souls, Demon Souls remake.
It's
going to be that. It's going to be, I believe, also the digital version of the Devil May Cry 5 Special Edition. I think Spider-Man as well.
Spider-Man is, yeah. Although it might not be day one. I think it was day one, but it might not be day one, but it's shortly thereafter.
Should be, because I'm not hearing anything uber impressive. I'm hearing a port and a remaster.
Right,
so
I think maybe Call of
Duty. I guess Devil May Cry is a... which one's the port and which one's... Because Devil May Cry is a remaster.
Devil May Cry is the special edition, definitive edition port. Which
I think it's called Devil May Cry 5 Remastered, though.
Then that's
It's called Special Edition.
Thank you. And then Demon's Souls is obviously the remaster, because that was PS3?
Not actually a remaster. It's a full-on remake.
Whatever. So yeah, but still. Even if it's a Xenoblade Chronicles scale remake, it's still a remake of a game that was a cult classic and then a special edition. So they better have that Miles Morales game. All right.
I don't think you're being fair to their launch lineup here. And Ratchet's coming out a few months.
Right,
later.
I'm saying launch day. Launch day. I want to know day one.
Demon's Souls is a big deal.
The reason Dark Souls worked was because Demon's Souls laid the groundwork and it captured people's imaginations, and then Dark Souls took it to the next level. And then people realized, oh, wait a minute, there was a game before this. It was Demon's Souls. And so now they're going to get that experience again. So that game's probably going to sell well because of the Dark Souls franchise.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But it's still that cult classic game that started all of this, and now it's getting appreciation, which is the same as Xenoblade. So... I'm just saying.
It's similar in that way, although, the Soul series is way larger than the Xenoblade series.
Obviously.
Spider-Man is a launch title, too, by
the way. There you go. So that covers it, because the Spider-Man game, even though I have not played it, if I had a PS4, it'd be one of my first purchases. Hands
100%.
Down. 100%. Yeah. And, it's hilarious that the Avengers game has apparently done, not bad sales-wise, but, reception-wise, because no one is talking about it on the level of Spider-Man. Because everyone's this is going to be the Avengers version of Spider-Man, and we have heard no one saying that. So that just shows how great Spider-Man was and how not so great Avengers was.
Yeah, we do not talk about Avengers. Don't. Even Keith and our reviews also showed, we were on the site, it was a poor attempt from Square Enix. I'm sorry.
And isn't that hilarious? Because they announced it years ago. years. They've been working on this for years. And then, like, this is what they get. And I hear, like, some decent things, and that's fine. But, you know, Spider-Man was the true Arkham of the Marvel Games universe. Avengers was, well, not. So, also, aren't we in a Nintendo podcast? We should probably get back to that.
Yes. But we love gaming.
Oh, we do love gaming.
It's part of
Absolutely.
The territory. It's part of the territory.
Yeah. So, we do have some interesting things to talk about, including our own presentation that we had today, again. But we're going to get all started off with, what have you been playing? And I'll go first, because, once again, I have played very, very little. However, I was able to go and dive into Fire Emblem Three Houses again. Ooh. I am getting ever closer to my endgame run of Silver Snow. And I just got done with the Chaos of War chapter. And I was not happy with that chapter for one main reason. I had built up my characters very well, especially because of the expansion pass DLC where you had, like, the, you know, those yellow checkmark levels, which you could easily boost your levels in, really quickly. So I had done that a lot, and I'd done, like, you know, the standard missions and blah, blah, blah. And so I get to this level, and it says recommended level 37. And I'm like, okay, so I had, like, two weekends left that I could have done battles if I needed to level up a little more. So I check my levels, and I have my Byleth at, like, 43 or something like that, and then the rest of the lowest of my crew is, like, 40. So I'm like, okay, so I'm three levels above the minimum. We're all good. So I get into the level, and I have my two teams split up, and I've got, like, all my all-stars except for, like, one, because it's only 10-person crew this time around. And so I'm like, okay, this is good, nice and balanced, got healers on both sides, great. So I'm meticulously going through, and in the center of the map is the Death Knight. And I'm like, okay, I know that Byleth and Catherine can kill him, I just got to get close enough. And this guy's got, like, a crazy critical hit ratio, I've always had a problem with that, but... I was like, okay, let's try it, and Felix almost killed him. I have no idea how that happened, but Felix almost killed him, but I had to do the Divine Pulse because he killed him instead. And I get to Byleth fighting him, and he just creams him. Like, Byleth did, like, 6 damage. I'm like, what the heck? That doesn't make sense. And so I look at the Death Knight's level. It's 48! Like, wait a minute. You said that the minimum requirement was 37, and the Death Knight is 48. He's 48 levels higher. He's 11 levels higher. How does that work? And so I started checking the rest of the map just to make sure I didn't do a mistake. And sure enough, everyone else is like 37, 38. Even Hubert, who's supposed to be your boss, is like 38. And I'm like, so wait a minute, the Death Knight is just that much stronger. And, like, what happened if I was even lower than this? All right, what would have happened if I had, like, the wrong level setting? I would be screwed.
Yeah, that's one thing I learned from Intelligent System Games. Is like, when he says, recommend the level 37, you go plus 10, maybe even more than that. That's what I've learned in my first playthrough. Never trust Intelligent System's recommended levels.
But that's the thing. Like, I have never had, and I'm on a higher difficulty than I was my last three runs, and I have never had this problem. Yeah, sure, sometimes there might be that one boss that has, like, that really high crit, or, like, those demonic beasts that just take so much beating to get through their shield. And that was fine. I got through that, but... I had never had a problem like this before, and I seriously had to luck the heck out. I had to do two people doing gambits just to lower him, and then I brought in Catherine, which was no small feat because she was on the other side of the map, and she had like a 40% hit rate with a 30% crit, and I was just praying that with her Thunder Branch she would hit one, and she did the first time out. So God bless my wife of a past timeline. But, like, without her, I wouldn't have killed the Death Knight, and he was literally a requirement to win. So that's not fair.
It sounds like your preparation was lacking.
No, I had perfect preparation. I had.
Did you have a horse? Did you have a horse slayer by chance?
A horse slayer? I did not. But even the most. But hold on.
Did you have Lysithia in your party by chance?
No, I had. This is Silver Snow. Hold on, this is Silver Snow. I didn't get to recruit her.
Yeah, I understand that, not wanting to. I mean, of course you could, but yeah, I get it.
I mean, could I have gotten a horse slayer? Sure, but with my luck, given the stats I was seeing, it wouldn't have made a difference. And
I think Hubert is the only other character who gets the spikes or dark spikes too. Yeah. So that is a tough spot. You need the horse slayer with, like, somebody who has some like Tempest Lance or something to, you could probably one shot him.
And in my current team, I honestly don't have a horse user outside of Happy, who of course is a magic user. So, I was trying to get Sylvain because I was going to have him be my horse guy, and that didn't work. So, and I would like, I'm going to use Ferdinand. Ah!
But, whoa, you should have. He's the best character.
Lies! But I did get through, and like I said, and that's the thing. Once I killed the Death Knight, everything else was easy. Like, Hubert took, like, no effort at all. All right? I just had to withstand bolting, which he couldn't even touch my Byleth. So, but it was great because I had just not played games a lot recently, and I was so invested. It took me like 40 minutes because of the Death Knight thing to beat this one level. And I was just like, oh, this is so frustrating, but oh, this is so good. So I'm going to hopefully do another level or two in the next few days. It depends on work, which just is never, ever ending. It really sucks at times, but, it was great. And then, as we found out yesterday on Heroes, we're going to get 4 more Path of Radiance characters. It was Gaytree, Shinin, Illana, and Jill, which is great because I've been honestly been wondering where some of these characters were. I'm like, come on, where are these people? So very happy about that. And so I've got over 300 orbs now thanks to the Tempest Trials. And the Phalanx thing is weird. Have you guys tried that?
Yeah, actually, I have been trying that. And...
Really weird. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't know what it is.
You don't really do anything.
Really understand it.
It's a strange deal. It's basically like, yeah, kind of like a whole raid boss thing in MMOs. Like, and basically, like, when it's pretty much, like, reported in every single hour. Like, there always is, like, an update of every single hour, like, how much support you're sending it to. And the strange thing is, because I've always been placing support to Elencina. That's her name?
Elencia.
Okay, thank you. And yeah, because her success rate has always been very low. But again, the low chance of winning, the high percentage rate payout. So I've always been focusing on her for the most part. And I always succeeded, thankfully, from like other people's support and using the shields. So I always get the maximum amount of points whenever I can. So it's kind of like a raid boss thing. But honestly, it's like a very simple aspect. It's like nothing... that's like very much requirement, nothing much about too much time to invest in. It's just like putting the support, maybe you invest in putting your shield for extra insurance, which you honestly don't really need to. Even though at my 9% chance of winning, I still won. So maybe it's a little bit broken on their side. Maybe I have to fix their systems. I don't know. But it was kind of like, it really doesn't, not really much anything. It's just like, invest, put it on, let it go, and wait for the hour. That's it. It's
yeah.
Really,
I mean, like
much.
I just logged in just to check it out, and we had killed the level the 5-star Ashnard.
I had done
one run with Sanaki on this one, and I'm like, okay, and I got an orb, I got some coins, and now it says the event has ended because we won, and there's still like seven. It says there's like 7 days to go.
Right.
It's just weird.
Because they still had like 2 more days of left of daily daily login basically for that event. But yeah, now we've been the 5-star form of Ashnar. Like, what's next? Is it done? It's only, we only just do it for those 3 days only? It's like, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Bring us another boss, I would think.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's just weird because I was like, okay, might as well try this out. And there's like, you know, daily rewards that you can do. So I got like 4 orbs just for trying for 2 days, and then I got an orb every time we beat the Phalanx boss. And I'm like, okay, but it's like, it's not like with Forging Bonds where you actually have to like accomplish levels, or Tempest Trials where you have to do multiple levels. It's just, hey, support this. I'm like,
right, fine,
whatever, and I get rewards. So okay, but yeah, hardly inspiring. And first of all, when you think Phalanx, you think Spartans, all right? You think Spartans in the trenches of Thermopylae defending the freedom of their species. And what do? Here we press buttons and just watch it all happen. That is not Sparta! This is Sparta! So, and I can say that because my school's mascot was a Spartan. You're welcome. So, but yes, I have. Aside from that, I honestly haven't been playing anything, and... barring something happening soon, that's not going to happen. However, I realized my birthday is really close. So even though I will not be buying Mario All-Stars 3D, I'm going to get my mom to buy it for me. I don't spend money, and I have a game after Calamity comes out, because I'll be buying
that.
What
day is your birthday?
The November 3rd.
November 3rd. Okay, that's a little further away than I thought.
Yeah. Oh, it's less than 2 months. Of course, we all know that that day is actually quite cursed, because it's election day.
That day is
Yeah,
oh,
I'm not happy.
Yeah, it could be cursed. Could be cursed.
I am not happy at all. I really am. So, but anyway, that's what I've been playing. So, Will, take it away.
For me, this past week has been kind of busy on my side. Naturally, just continuing on the Wii Fit Adventures, Ring Fit Adventure. Continuing on the Ring Fit Adventure. Actually, just being the first. Master of Allegra, and okay, Allegra, that is something. And Tyler, once you get back your Switch again and go face against Allegra, get rid of your legs. Your legs are gonna go burn. They will hurt by the end of it. It's just during this past weekend, just training my legs, and it hurts. So again, reminder to everyone listening to the podcast: never skip leg day. You will be very thankful for that. So just been sitting on a Ring Fit Adventure, and also this past week as well, I actually have finished up 13 Sentinel Aegis Rim, and the review is currently up on the site from our colleague. And just gotta say, for VanillaWare's newest game, it is a very great sci-fi. Like, try not to spoil it too much. The game is coming out on next week, on the 22nd, as I checked. But basically, it's a very great sci-fi. It leaves you guessing. Like, there is a lot, like, multiple aliases, very sci-fi-esque. Like, it always leaves you guessing, like, how to and connecting the dots. Like, how is this related to him? Or, like, basically a big giant web. Like, you know that conspiracy theory as GIF that's well known. Like, it pretty much is indeed that. A lot of webs, a lot of lies, a lot of deceit, but also keeps you guessing, just, like, really gets your brain pumping. Plus, with a slight gameplay of, like, a tower defense, is just really great. So, 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, I highly recommend it once it comes out. So, it's a very great game. And, of course, naturally, I kind of went back into a bit of Fall Guys because, again, the whole Big Yeetus update, which I gotta say that whole name, Big Yeetus and Anti-Cheetus. Like, Mediatonic, I wonder how the heck you come up with these names, I swear. But, been playing, going back a little bit of Fall Guys, got a few wins. And, the Big Yeetus update, very much appreciated because this is definitely like new, fresh remix content that a lot of people ask for until the next season. So variation on different stages, of course with the big hammer of Big Yeetus, which can either help you or really screw you over. So it's just a very much appreciated update from Mediatonic. So Fall Guys, Mediatonic, very, very good stuff. So, and of course, naturally going on Heroes, just trying to finish up this last Tempest Trials, get every single award. But overall, it's just been it's been quite busy on my side. So, and just as a quick thing as well, because I'm not sure anyone of you has go on YouTube, but Chugga Conroy has announced his next OP series, and he's gonna be finally tackling Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which I don't know, maybe that's a sign for me to actually finally finish the game. So Chugga Conroy, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is gonna be coming out tomorrow. So if you want to go continue on with the series of Xenoblade Chronicles, then definitely highly recommend seeing Chuck Conroy's video.
Now hold on, before we continue, Tyler.
Yes.
What do you think about Xenoblade Chronicles 2? Please remind the audience.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is one of the best games on Switch.
There you go.
One of my favorite games on Switch.
Really? I recall that you had think it elsewise like roughly 1 year ago.
No. What? No. No. Me?
Oh, haven't disliked
Xenoblade Chronicles 2? No. No. I always liked it. You know, I'm not one to just, you know, stop playing a game after 60 hours and then decide, this isn't for me, it's pretty garbage, and then come back to it and change my mind. I wouldn't do that. Me?
No, forbid.
Right. Yeah.
I need to get Torna, actually. Torna's expensive. Torna's like $40.
Really? I got it for like 30.
I think it was 30 bucks last
time. Was it 30 bucks?
I got it for 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised when I saw the price tag. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I'll have to get it. How long is Torna?
It was about 20 hours, give or take, you know, including side missions and everything.
Okay, 20 hours is that's worth it for sure.
Yeah, and again, it's deep. Like, it's deeper than I expected it to be. So, all right. Go ahead,
what have I been playing? All right, I have. So I did get my Switch back this week. I haven't jumped back into Ring Fit yet, but I probably will tomorrow. But I've been playing Dragon Ball FighterZ, actually. I got Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Right.
I followed through on my promise to pick that up right away. And I've really only gotten to start dabbling with it. I'm starting to get a little bit smoother with some of my movements and combos. And by combos, I mean this one singular combo. I'm just playing a Super Saiyan Goku to learn the basics. And he's like obviously like the Mario of the game. So his combos are all pretty simple. Learning the fundamentals is really fun. And much like with Xenoblade Chronicles 2, ironically, at first I was like, I didn't like the training mode because I felt like it just kind of threw you in and it didn't really give you a whole lot of guidance. But after looking up some YouTube videos that have explained like all the options that are in there, I can definitely see myself spending a lot of hours in the lab this week working on Super Saiyan Goku and Teen Gohan, because there's a ton of stuff you can do with the AI that's really, really cool. But I think the best thing about this game is it's a fighting game on Switch that's not Smash Bros. That actually runs well. Like, it runs really well. I have not played a game on a console other than the Switch for years. So I don't remember what it's like to play Mortal Kombat on something not Switch. So I don't know if it's running 30. That's all to say. I'm not sure if it's 30 frames or 60 frames on Switch, but it looks gorgeous. The visuals in battle are great. The story cutscenes are scratchy, but not a big deal to me at all. The actual fighting is smooth. I haven't experienced any technical issues in the little bit that I played. I haven't brought it online yet because, again, I'm still training myself up. I'm going to get waxed if I just jump into the online now. But yeah, I planned on getting this game. The demo came out, and I hated the demo. Like, I didn't hate the game. I didn't even really get to play the game because the demo was just so poorly constructed. But so it actually turned me off of it. But after playing it with my buddy, I realized how cool the game was. It's super fast paced. It's pretty simple. It's not like a super complex fighting game. It's just the speed is the hardest to catch up to.
Yep.
But once you do, once I do, I'm sure it'll be a blast. So I'm really enjoying that. And then I believe that is actually it for me. I went to GameStop the other day because, of course, my Joy-Cons are broken. So I noticed that when I was playing FighterZ. And I needed to pick up a new pair because Nintendo, with COVID, they're not repairing our stuff. So they over the coals there, but I brought a notebook and I was writing down Switch games that I wanted. I looked at the eShop afterwards, and there are like 40 games that I have written down that I want to get on Switch still. It's crazy. Like, I we've complained about the lack of games this year, and it's been infuriating on so many levels. But just looking at it from that context, I will never get around to all the games that I want to play on Switch, and that's kind of sad. But at the same time, I'm glad that I checked FighterZ off the list because it's definitely one that I'm going to sink some time into.
And I think that's kind of the most important thing as well. Like, when there are times like the trials, like when people say like there are no good games, perhaps it's probably best to look back and look at the old games that you never got to the first place. Because again, you don't need to pay full price for new games. Always check the bargain bins of something you haven't got yet, because those things, yeah, like Dragon Ball FighterZ, that is a very good title. So yeah, definitely look back if it's a trial period.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've had a very interesting news week, not the least of which is what happened today. And then thank goodness that they've been doing these directs before the podcast, that we were not waiting a week to talk about it. So we're just gonna encompass all of this together. So it's time to go down the warp pipe for some direct talk. Yeah, see, I did that. All right, so yes, we had yet another partner showcase from Nintendo and their third party partners, sure, whatever. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen, this one was not horrible. I know, it's so hard to believe, but yes, after what is this, the third or fourth one?
I think it was the third one.
So, with this third one, we actually got some really good announcements, more or less, and the biggest ones by far.
Hold on, guys, I'm getting in on this PS5. I'm getting in on this PS5.
Go! Go, Tyler! Do it!
Okay, sorry. Back to the show. Back to the show.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, fine. Anyway, the biggest announcement by far in many people's eyes was the not one, but two Monster Hunter games that are coming to the Switch, and I believe they are exclusive. They didn't specifically say it, but it's pretty much implied. So we're going to get Monster Hunter Rise, which is coming out March 26, 2021, and then Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, which the first game was on the 3DS and apparently was a very big hit. So good for them. But yes, and that one's coming summer of next year.
Right.
So
right.
Monster Hunter has had a kind of an interesting history on Nintendo platforms, because the first one was Monster Hunter Tri, TRI, on the Wii, which was good, but this was before Monster Hunter World came out, so it was much, you know, more for Japan than anything else. And then there was multiple Monster Hunter games on 3DS, like Generations,
yes.
And like we just mentioned, Monster Hunter Stories. And so for us to get not one, but two Monster Hunter games in the same year, they must have some real faith that this is going to sell on the Switch, and that now that World, which is, of course, the PlayStation, Xbox, and PC masterpiece, more or less, that one, like, blew up in terms of Monster Hunter popularity, that it's going to, you know, come to here. And I think it's got a good shot.
Right. Like, I actually been talking to a friend of mine who's, like, a very big Monster Hunter fan. And before, like, again, this was when it was still in rumors, a lot, like, he told me, like, one of the producers says, like, they weren't even going to make a Monster Hunter for the Switch because they really were focusing on Monster Hunter World. But, yeah, now, lo and behold, now we finally got Rise. And, again, they're pretty much taking, they're going the next step of what they learned from World, because, yeah, World was pretty much is the game that brought Monster Hunter to the West. It boomed in popularity and just, like, did so much things well. Free updates, free content, just did everything well. Really well, and that's what pretty much put Capcom on the map. And with Rise, this thing is like, they're definitely, I mean, sure, that doesn't have that same power, and a lot of people really want that rumored Switch Pro to actually can run this thing very much more cleaner. But yeah, with Rise, it just basically is the next step from World. And as the producer has been talking about, Rise is basically instead of like the whole big world like in Monster Hunter World, this thing's all about verticality. It's just going up high, up to the mountains, and just like the aesthetic of it all. Like, again, very Japanese, very East Asian culture, geography, and of course that whole the sling bug, if I'm correctly, I've got the name proper, but basically it is has that extra feature of mobility of like, basically you pretty much become Spider-Man in this game. Like, yeah, you know, World was pretty much interesting. Yeah, just put a bit more extra mobility with the Spider-Man sling bug, and then, yeah, you could pretty much do some insane combos with these, with the weapons of Monster Hunter. So, yeah, it's just, and of course, naturally, new monsters, new story. It's just, it's a lot, there is a lot of things here for Monster Hunter fans to be very happy about. And again, just continuing off from what World is, and now giving the Switch a proper release is just like, it's a very good time for being a Monster Hunter fan.
What about you, Tyler?
First of all, I'm charging my squat power because I had a victory in securing the PS5. So we're in
nice.
There. Thanks, accomplished. I did it. What a great day. Thank you, Walmart. Anyway.
The disc model, yes? Is it disc model? Or
disc model? Yeah, the disc model. Yeah, okay. Get this digital nonsense out of here. But yes, so I got the disc model. Monster Hunter, I've never played, but when I saw this, I thought of Breath of the Wild right away. Something about it just made me think of Breath of the Wild. I might get it. I think in this direct, there were like four or five games that I would put in the will get or might get. And this was definitely in the might get. It's a huge release, though. Like, this is, it's hard to understate. I think Western audiences, at least people like me, this game, Monster Hunter, has never really been interesting to us. But the games sell crazy, crazy well around the world. And I'm sure they sell pretty well here. I'm sure they have a nice following by this. It's a really big game that's coming to Switch. And it's definitely something to be excited about. I wish that that the world looked a little bit better. It's a little too, like, I don't know, it looks a little old, a little dated, but maybe that's, again, because I've been, like, everybody else watching all this Xbox and PlayStation stuff.
I think it looks...
So it might be an unrealistic standard.
No, I think it looks a lot like Breath of the Wild, just, like, with a slightly different, you know, palette. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. No, it's not... It doesn't look bad, don't get me wrong. Breath of the Wild has, like, a better art direction, though. Like, it's similar to Wind Waker in that way, where Wind Waker on GameCube still looks great today because it's the cel-shaded graphics. They're timeless. Breath of the Wild is similar in that way, where it has a really unique art direction that makes it just look gorgeous and stunning, even though the actual textures aren't incredible. This is a little bit more realistic in that sort of, I mean, if you follow what I'm trying to say there. It still looks good, don't get me wrong. I'll have to, you know, wait to see more. I didn't watch the Monster Hunter Direct that followed it, so I'll probably go back to do that. But yeah, no, this is a really, really big title, so I'm happy for a Nintendo and for Capcom. When was the last big Capcom game we got on Switch?
Haven't.
Probably the whole Street Fighter HD collection.
That or Phoenix Wright collection, or the trilogy, whatever, the remaster. Like, that's it. Like, they have not... Capcom, for whatever reason, has been one, like, the least using of the Switch. Like, Square Enix has been great. Like, they honestly have provided a lot. And then Capcom's like, yeah, here's a couple ports. Here's a port of a 25-year-old game to satisfy.
I remember, like, yeah, the report we did way long back. Like, yeah, they just want to test the waters real. Like, they were not heavily invested on the Switch until now, so.
Yeah, till now. So, hey, it took them 4 years, but hey, we're here!
And of course, naturally as well, like, there's gonna be two different editions of the game. Plus, like, they're also gonna have amiibos, which, again, that's always a nice thing for collectors out there, myself included.
There're gonna be three different ones, and they'll all be available on the release day of 3/26/21 for Monster Hunter Rise. And it's gonna be a Palamute, a Magnamalo, and Palico.
And also, yeah, just a quick detail as well, because last I checked, these three amiibos are currently a GameStop exclusive, unfortunately. So yeah, if you want to go get these three amiibos, they are currently as a GameStop exclusive. But if you're living here in New York, obviously you can get it here, no problem. So, but I also believe this is probably the first time that actually have dogs in Monster Hunter World and instead of the usual Palico cats. So I think this is probably a new thing. I'm not sure. I could be absolutely wrong. But yeah, this is the first time I'm actually seeing dogs in Monster Hunter. So that's something exciting.
See, and in that regard, it's better than Breath of the Wild, because for the longest time you couldn't even touch the dogs. Monster Hunter Rise lets you ride the dogs. So that's them saying, yeah, we can do this better than you, Nintendo. Just saying. Hey, never forget, Capcom was the reason we got Seasons and Ages, all right? And if it wasn't a money issue, we would have gotten a Miracle, or what was it, like, Miracles or something like that. But, and Ages is one of my favorite games. And Tyler, when I say Goddess of Time, who do you not think of?
When you say Goddess of Time, who do I not think of?
No, I'm sorry. That wasn't you. That was another friend of mine. I'm sorry.
This sounds familiar, though. It does sound vaguely
Sonic.
familiar.
A friend of mine.
Yes, that's right.
Friend of mine said Sonic, and I'm like, no, Goddess of Time. I'm like, oh, I know, but Sonic is timeless. That's not the point. I thought Sonic, and I thought of you. Like, no, it was my other friend. So, who's also a Sonic fan, girls, but anyway, but moving on. So these were obviously really great ways. This was easily their best start to a partner direct, period. Like, the other ones just do not compare. And then
this could lead off a regular direct and be like,
oh,
yeah,
heck yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes,
heck
yes.
Yeah. So, but then, oh, man, Nintendo. Boxing Fitness. Really? I didn't know there was an original. Like, they're like, this is Boxing Fitness 2. I didn't know there was an original.
There was a while back. I mean, this was before Ring Fit Adventure. Like, they were trying to fill in that void of what Wii Fit was. And so that was the only temporary placement. And a lot of people complain, no Wii Fit Trainer DLC? Then no.
But yes, Fitness Boxing 2, Rhythm and Exercise, is coming available December 4th. #JustGetRingFitAdventure.
Oh, you weren't interested, though, in learning about the three new trainers that were going to come in and motivate you? Didn't we really need profiles on them? I mean, the game we didn't need to see, but then they were like, and get to know these three characters. And they gave us names. And
I totally skipped this section. Like, what, I was already pressed for time, but when I saw this, I'm like, I ain't spending a minute on this. So, all right, so then they bounced back. We had the reveal of Disgaea 6 Defiance of Destiny. And, okay, I'll admit, I've never played Disgaea. I know Will has. But, like, just looking at this game and hearing, like, some of the stat numbers, like, you could do damage in the quadrillions. And, like, how? Okay, like, so you're telling me his power level is over 9,000?
Oh, it is beyond, it's exponentially beyond
oh,
that.
Oh, we know.
Yes.
I mean, no. That's why power levels are bullcrap. But and here's the big part. It's not just a new Disgaea game. It is Disgaea 6 exclusively on Nintendo Switch, which is a huge thing, because obviously Disgaea was out on the other platforms before Switch. So that must, I guess Disgaea 5 Definitive Edition or whatever it was, did really good on the platform for us to get the exclusive next title.
Right. And if I remember correctly, you can actually, there, it is going to be a an online trial for Disgaea 5 for Nintendo Online subscription users.
Yeah, I'm at that point. Let me, okay, yeah, it's going to be the 23rd through the 29th. You'll be able to do a game trial.
So yeah, as you said, originally the first Disgaea game came on the original PS2. So now just coming here on the Switch, and also notice, because usually it's always been very known for sprite art, is like very 2D sprite art, but now this is actually the first game to go into the 3D model realm, which is a first for the Disgaea series. And yeah, just like seeing the premise of it all, and of course they actually the pre-order on their site of Nippon Software America, it's gonna be something. I mean, we need to know a bit more of the story, but if anything else, Disgaea has always been known for just absolutely like ridiculous storylines, like it's just over the top, and of course again in the billionth and trillions, it's just like, yeah, forget about it, like this thing will just, like, if you want to want logic in the games, you can forget it in this game. That's just how great this guy is. It's like, it's so overly the top ridiculous, that's the main appeal of it. It's just like, there is no other game like it. Of course, naturally, there is that grinding that a lot of people love, so that could either be for you or it turns you off. But yeah, this guy, like, for a game like Disgaea 6 to be shown off here, I mean, it is fairly niche, granted, because again, you either like this guy or hate this guy, but yeah, to be shown in a partner presentation like this, it's really quite something. And I'm just glad that, yeah, this game is, like, gonna be a Switch exclusive and not on a Sony stuff on the console, which is quite very rare to see. So yeah. I'm interested to see how it goes.
And when someone asks, well, hey, do you know someone who's gonna get this game? He's gonna point to himself and go, Disgaea!
I really hated when you typed up that joke. I did not want to reply.
It was so good!
Jeez.
All right. Moving on, we had the Empire of Sin game, which, yeah, and then we had a Sniper Elite 4 Italia. That was weird. And then a slew of games like Hinterlands, the Long Dark, which came out a long time ago. PGA Golf 2K21.
Really?
Are you kidding me?
Really?
Like, how little do you have that you have to show a golf game on a Switch? Are you kidding me right now?
Unless they bring back Mario Toadstool Tour, then yeah, that's something about that.
That would be okay, but like that would be first party. Anyway, but then Hades has come out. And then there was the very interesting Balan Wonderlands
from
Square Enix, which is like a mix of various, you know, platformers, including Mario with all the costumes.
And
it's from Yuji Naka, the creator of Sonic.
And Knights.
Yes, it feels a lot like Knights. It feels a lot like Knights. Even the animations for the characters running looks like the kids in Knights running, which not what Knights was known for. Knights was known for flying.
Yes.
The ground gameplay was not very good, but fortunately you weren't on the ground for more than 3 seconds a level. But yeah, this game looks really good. I'm definitely going to get it because I love, obviously, Sonic, and I love Knights. Knights is definitely my most underrated game of all time, Knights into Dreams. Absolute classic. If you can get it anywhere, you should. It's on, I think, Xbox Arcade and PlayStation Store. But yeah, great game. This one, and you're right, Todd, has shades of Mario as well. Lots of the power-ups look pretty cool. The worlds remind me of Banjo-Kazooie, Mario 64, like the objective being to find the statues. So this looks like a really interesting title. They revealed it, I think, at one of the other, I think it was at the Xbox event they revealed this game. But they said it was coming to Switch then, so I assumed this would be a Switch purchase. But assuming it runs well, this is definitely a game I'm going to get on Switch.
And ironically, it too is going to be available on March 26th, so you must choose Monster Hunter or Balan Wonderworld. So,
yeah,
choose. But yeah, that was a unique title. And then let's see, after that was Rune Factory 5, another Will title.
And
tell me I'm wrong.
I haven't actually played the Rune Factory. My brother has. I have not. I played the Harvest Moon series, but not the Rune Factory series. But again, if you love Rune Factory, you love a farming simulator with RPGs elements, then yeah, this game, a lot of people are pretty happy that Rune Factory 5 is finally shown off. So,
And then there, of course, you can find true love in the game. And I'm like, that's a Will title. Just saying.
Why, you don't like your life sin now and then?
Oh, I mean, it worked. Yeah. It worked occasionally in Fire Emblem. You know, that was a perk of certain games, but it wasn't while I played. Yeah, I know people who like do it for these kinds of things, and it's honestly kind of sad. But whatever. So then again, one of my best friends in life is like a Sims addict, so I try not to judge. And
Sims is popular.
Addict.
Sims are popular.
And I mean, added, like, she gets every single expansion. It doesn't matter how big or small. She's like, stacking her cash so she can get the next one. Because, like, this is, like, all she plays. I love you, but I'm never playing Sims with you. So. But, Todd, you can create your a new life here. I can barely handle my life here. You think I won't screw that one up, too?
If anything else, don't underestimate The Sims. It is a very pop. It's quite something. It's just, like, just want to play as God. That's kind of the deal.
That's what Civilization is for, but that's another story. Anyway, and then, of course, they ended the show with the not exactly shocking reveal, but good reveal of Ori, Will of the Wisps. It is out today, yesterday at the time of this recording, or by the time you hear this recording. And but yes, the first game came out this year or last year for Switch, the definitive edition.
I think it was last year.
Came out last year.
We got the definitive edition and it ran really well, and I guess it did really good because even though Will of the Wisps came out this year, it got the port. So the first one ran great. I'm sure the second one will run great. And again, it's out right now. So if you've not gotten to play Ori, Will of the Wisps, go and get it. It's a really great franchise. It's very old school, but has very modern elements, of course, a very gorgeous look to it. And your heart will break.
Yep, it will. Like, again, I as mentioned before, I played the original first game. And yeah, for Moon Studios to finally bring this thing, Will of the Wisps here on the Switch, it's just like, it's absolutely great. Again, if you love the first game, then you're going to love the second game. And plus, also at the end as well, in case you don't want to wait for a digital title, you can get the physical title currently. That's going to be later on, I believe, in the December month on, 1/8-bit Games, not a different store that has both of the games, and as well as like a very good special collector's edition, which last I checked, I believe, is currently selling at $150. Plus, you have to add a shipping on that, so a little bit on the pricey side. But if you love, want to support this game on physical's release, then yeah, that's pretty much the current option right now.
Yeah, the physical option is cool. And, you're right, it's not like a mega surprise, but it's somewhat surprising because I thought Microsoft said they were going to stop bringing over their games to Switch. They said that they were done with that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. That's why I said sort of a surprise because you can never really trust them. But yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to see it here today, that's for sure. Right, though, like at some point, I guess we would have expected it. But this was, I thought, a great way to end the show. And this is the one game I'm definitely going to get.
So That was a nice way, because I was like, oh great, it's Ori, and then I'm like, oh, when's the release date? And they go today. I'm like, okay, that makes up for it. Because if we had to wait till like November for this, I'm like, why did you announce it now? All right. So overall, let's grade it so we can move on. I'm gonna give this a B for two reasons. One, there were some games in there that honestly we didn't need. We didn't need fitness boxing or boxing fitness or whatever you called it. We didn't need Sniper Elite or the golfing game or Empire of Sin. So that's a deduction. The other deduction is that while there was some big announcements, again, 2021, which is why our title of the episode is "If We're Gonna Be Broke in 2021," because it's gonna be so stacked apparently with first party and third party games that we're not gonna have much money for anything else. And that's just for Nintendo. As Tyler just mentioned, he just bought his PS5, and you know that Sony is gonna want to stack their 2021 with a lot of games to get their console sales up. So, but he's gonna be broke.
Oh
And
yeah, I mean, listen, I'm already broke, but that didn't stop me from
so,
throwing $500 at a PlayStation.
thanks, straight
boy, and
man.
that's plus tax as well, and plus shipping. So,
Oh yeah. Oh well, delivery was free. Good news, delivery was free.
Well, it should be with that price. But now, Tyler, you go and get that console, and then you
That's
go to
right.
get those games, and then you
I
go to
kind of want to
play
get the
those
Xbox
games.
too.
Yeah,
those financing options on
Yeah,
the
good luck
Xbox are
with
nice,
that
though.
because
You're, and you're gonna play those games, and you're gonna enjoy those games, and you're gonna love those games. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose.
that. I mean, yeah, it looks like Ubering is in my future because I'm gonna need something to pay for these expenditures, and my job certainly isn't gonna do that.
As a former Uber driver, I recommend going to near a university because you'll get a lot of traffic
Yep.
there. Do not
I do live
Uber
near a
after 10
couple, so.
p.m. Do not go Uber after 10 p.m. and make sure you have something to keep you busy while in the car while you're waiting for calls. So, yeah, because that was
Like
like
a
my
Nintendo Switch? Would a Nintendo Switch
yes,
be
like a
possible?
Nintendo Switch. See?
Or just install a Nintendo, like a gaming console into Uber, and they'll give you five dollar
Yeah,
deals.
that's a good
No,
idea.
that's a hor no, 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 that's a horrible idea because A, if you give them something like a Switch, that they can easily steal that.
Yeah.
B, if they're drunk, they might break it. C, if they're sick, they might spew on it. And D, you know something's gonna go wrong. So why
Yeah.
take the risk? So w
That's
play
true.
play it while you're in the driver's seat, and then when you get a call, you put it in your glove compartment, and that way nobody asks about it. Because it's like, oh, like, because if they don't know the Switch is there, they're not gonna be tempted to take it.
A good
So,
point. That's a very
yeah,
good point.
that's why I'm the host. So anyway, mine's a B. It was the we honestly had good reveals on like the last two, outside of course Shin Megami, and I felt like I felt there was more effort. It felt like there was actual effort put into this, and I do appreciate
Yes.
that. But it needs to be this level of consistency, but still better, because they still trip themselves up at times. And I felt that, because this could have easily been like 9 minutes without like boxing and Empire of Sin and golf and the hit and Long Dark and all that. So shorten it to like the bare essentials. Give us the games that you know we'll be interested in, and then that's all you need. So, but yeah, I'll give it a B.
Like I'm gonna go for my side, give it a solid B plus because like again, they actually had some very good hits with Monster Hunter, with two Monster Hunter games, Will of the Wisps, and of course naturally with The Sky is Six. There was definitely something good for the hardcore fans to say the least. And again, with the whole, also kind of like spreading out as well with the R2 like Amiibos and of course naturally like other games. It's just like, those are the three games that pretty much stood out for me. And of course, naturally they did Shadow Drops with Will of the Wisps, which again always very much appreciated. And of course, they announced the physical edition. So, I mean, yeah, there's definitely the downers of the yeah the boxing too, and of course, I mean, I don't know. The Land of the Sin is actually the mafia game is actually pretty interesting. If anything else, again, it's basically a mafia XCOM, but that's if you want your RTS. But again, Monster Hunter is pretty much how you start a presentation. It was very big, and no, many people just kind of can't wrote it off as a rumor. And now Monster Hunter are here. Everyone's getting hyped, and yeah, Monster Hunter is definitely kind of like the kicker for this presentation. So yeah, for me, it's a solid B plus.
I agree with Todd. I'd give it a B. I liked Balan. I liked Ori and the Monster Hunters, and Disgaea was a pretty cool game as well. I'm not sure I'm gonna get that, but I think that the bar was obviously set really low for this, given how poor the first two were. Although I told you guys in the chat, I had a feeling this one was going to be good. I don't know why. I just had a hunch that this one was going to be good, and it certainly matched that expectation. I don't have a problem with the 2021 stuff, Todd, just because it's September now. It's like September 17th when we're recording this. Like,
I know.
If they were going to release, you know, a game in November, I mean, I guess that'd be cool. But I mean, at that point, it's only an extra month, you know, 2 months until 21. So not a big deal for me on those release dates. A lot of these games are coming soon, which is great. Ori was dropped today, which is great. I'm waiting for the physical version. But all around, like, I think that the reveals themselves were largely good. There was no jaw-dropping wow for me, although Monster Hunter will be that for other people. So that's why I give it a B.
But again, like, where's Bravely? Like, that was supposed to come out. There's like, this would have been the perfect time. You know, you drop Balan, and then right after that, you show Bravely. It comes out, let's just be generous, say December.
Good point. You know,
and like, that's the perfect, like, Christmas game. And then that'll satisfy us until Balan and Monster Hunter comes out. Like, this will depend the time. But they not. It's again 2021. We're already broke there.
Yeah, Bravely should have been there. You're right. Sorry to interrupt you. You're right.
No, you're right.
Bravely was definitely an odd miss. I kind of have just assumed that that's coming out in 2021 since we haven't heard about it for so long. And the same thing for Doom Eternal, actually. Like, at this point, I feel like that's just never coming over. But it's, you know, they haven't said it's never coming over. So,
well, remember, the original Doom took like a year and a half to come over.
It took a while to come over. It took a while. But still, I'd like some sort of update on that. But I don't blame Nintendo for that, obviously. I mean, it's a partner showcase. So the partners are going to give you what the partners are going to give you. Nintendo's job is to make a good presentation out of it. And I think they did that this time.
And Capcom, hey, eyes over here. Look at the fro, okay? You've got your Monster Hunter games out, okay? You've done Street Fighter, okay? You've tested the waters enough. Give us our gosh dang Phoenix Wright game! All right, you left us on that cliffhanger for Spirit of Justice. We have waited so long, and the remake collection of the trilogy was awesome. So either give us part two to build it up and then drop it next year. I will happily go broke for Phoenix Wright. Okay, we have waited long enough. Give us our gosh dang Phoenix Wright 7. All right, so you have been warned. We will find you if we don't get it soon. All right. And we will be yelling objection all day long. So, moving on. Now, if you recall a few weeks back, I noted that I felt that there was going to be a Nintendo Direct proper before the end of September because of a shareholders meeting that was confirmed to be happening. Well, obviously that didn't happen, but the shareholders meeting did. And it was virtual, but Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa noted that there are, quote, many games coming to the Switch for 2021 and beyond. And also he's going to intend to, quote, continue developing hardware to pursue unique entertainment offerings. Okay. Like, can you give us more than that? Like, hello?
Yeah, nothing. There's nothing really much saying to that. And of course, we're going to shareholders meeting. It's like, okay, you got to show us something. Okay, and of course, naturally, Nintendo always like to play things close to their chest. So, okay, fine. If you want to be a Nintendo ninja about it, but yeah, because like there's kind of also one thing that's kind of like been missing as well. Because like this is also the presentation showcase before. I was about to say like a lot of people were just wondering, where's Persona 5 Scramble? Like, where's those other games? Like, because they did say it's going to be more presentations later in this year.
Yeah.
So, like, I can only imagine what else. I mean, come on, Persona 5 Scramble, please, for me. I don't know.
Or even better than that, how about just Persona 5? Jerks. I will never stop being mad about that. I did not ask for a dang Warriors game when we didn't even get the original. All right? You could do it for Zelda, because we've been playing Zelda forever. You could do it for Fire Emblem, because we've been playing Fire Emblem for a long time. We haven't been playing Persona on a Nintendo console. We've only had the Persona Q game, so why are you giving us a Warriors title? And it's even set after the main game, so if you haven't played Persona 5, you have no idea what's going on here. Stop being mean. Jerks. Anyway. But yeah, it doesn't reveal much, but we're gonna be so broke in 2021. Because let's be generous here. Let's say that what games do we know are coming out? So like, there's gonna be a Zelda title, right? There's gonna be at least one Zelda title next year, all right? Because it's the 35th anniversary, so they'll do something. So that's one. All right. If we're lucky, Bayonetta 3 will come out, maybe. We'll probably get at least, I'll be generous, 3 surprise first-party titles that we don't know about from other franchises. So maybe Donkey Kong, maybe another Mario title. Oh, there you go. There you go. We have the Mario 3D World with Bowser's Fury. That's coming out next year. So add 3 new games, maybe, being generous, a new IP. You know, there is going to be a lot they're going to do or want to do, but... You know, we kind of like a little bit of a teaser on that. Just a little. Please? Ugh. Because it is September, and remember, usually by this time, they've started announcing games for next year. And right now, outside of the third parties, all we got is Mario. Not exactly the best thing here, Hotshot. Alright, moving on. We have, yes, as we teased this earlier, the death of the 3DS. So, they have officially stopped production of 3DS, and so if you somehow have not gotten a 3DS, you probably should try and get it soon. And but yes, it's been a nice long run, 9 years.
Mm-mm.
Things have been around for 9 years, and in many ways, it was the saving grace of Nintendo, because this was going on during the Wii U era. And so when we had nothing for Wii U, we had something for 3DS.
Yep.
And there were a lot of great games on 3DS. I mean, I'm talking, you know, Fire Emblem Fates, Shadows of Valencia, Metroid Samus Returns.
Yep.
We had Mario 3D Land. We had Link Between Worlds.
It's a plethora of games. I mean,
so many games.
Yeah.
Oh, there was
Kid Icarus Uprising.
What was that minor title? Smash Brothers. Right, there was Smash Brothers.
That was actually
3D.
Smash Brothers on a 3DS. We forgot about that. Yes,
I didn't forget. There was so much. I mean, granted, it didn't do DS numbers, and the 3D gimmick, yeah, kind of got abandoned by the end, but it was still a very good handheld system. It did really well for Nintendo, and it really kept them going when during the dark days of the Wii U. So it did its job. It did it very well. They kind of held on a little too long, but you know, they made it work. So, and now they can just focus on the Switch.
Yeah, that's probably the next best thing. Like, and of course, naturally, for everyone who currently has a 3DS model, whatever it be, a new 3DS or whatever it is, those things are collector's items now. And the only way you could probably get a 3DS model refurbished is on Nintendo's own site. So if you have a 3DS model, keep it locked and keep it somewhere safe, because probably those things got to go up in price now. I mean, even though it's got like how many units are currently out in the world right now? Like 10 million? I don't know. Like more than that?
What's the question?
How many 3DS units are currently out in the world right now?
3DS?
3DS is like 60 million.
Yeah, well over 60. Did you say 10? Dude.
Again, I was lowbarring
it. This isn't the PS Vita.
I was lowbarring it, sorry. But yeah, like, now these things are permanent collectors, so yeah, just keep them safe. So yeah.
Yeah, the 3DS is my favorite Nintendo handheld of all time. Not counting Switch. Switch would beat it, but not counting Switch. There's just so many like all-time great games on there. I mean, it introduced me to Fire Emblem, which is my favorite series ever. The Smash Bros. On there was awesome. Kid Icarus Uprising was a really cool, unique experience. Also one of my favorite games ever. A Link Between Worlds is just an unbelievable top-tier Zelda game. Very underappreciated these days. Mario 3D Land is solid. The RPGs on that system, I already mentioned Fire Emblem, but Bravely Default is phenomenal as well. I like the Pokemon games on the
Pokemon
3DS.
Pokemon's good.
The 3DS, it goes to show that in the end, good software drives everything. Because the 3D gimmick, while I enjoyed it more than most, I don't think anybody really used it, including me. By the end of it, we were just like, no, it's down to the games. Nobody used it so much they released a 2DS, which is just a powered up regular DS.
Yeah.
So lessons learned from Nintendo there. Gimmicks aren't really what sell consoles. They
Something. Don't push it. Like, because the Switch is a gimmick.
No, the Switch isn't a gimmick.
Yes, the Switch is a gimmick! It's a console you can take anywhere. That's a gimmick.
I mean, the Wii motion controls were a gimmick, but what sold the Wii was Wii Sports, the software.
Yeah, but the gimmick with the Switch is that you could take it anywhere, and then the software was something
that
was...
Right. But that's not what sold
the software sold it, but the gimmick is that it.
Right.
Every console has a gimmick, whether it's whether it's PlayStation with its infinite graphics, whether it's the Xbox One,
that a gimmick.
We'll just stop. We're not going to get anywhere with this. So,
yeah, that's fair. But regardless, that my point is that software is what sells things. You know,
absolutely.
That is at the end of the day the reason the Switch is so successful is because it launched with Breath of the Wild, then released a Mario Kart, then released a top tier 3D Mario game, and that's really when it started to soar. You know, it comes down to software. The console, what it can do is very beneficial and can take something to the next level, but ultimately software is what's going to drive everything, and that's really what I think the 3DS showed, because it has one of the best libraries of a Nintendo handheld. It's definitely my favorite.
Unlike the Vita, which barely had anything. Isn't that right, Sony? Admit your mistakes! Admit your mistakes and kneel at the altar of Nintendo. I want to say I feel bad for them, but I really don't. The PSP was horrible, and then the PS Vita wasn't much better, and it's like, you know, we're going to go up against Nintendo. Why? Why would you do that? Why?
The PSP itself, like, there was, like, a couple of games that was okay, but yeah, the Vita was just, like... Yeah, just how do you market and sold that thing is like, yeah, Sony, that was definitely one of your biggest blunders.
All right, so moving on from that, we have Breath of the Wild. So this is a kind of an interesting fact that happened. The NPD was doing some numbers on various things in the U.S. and they revealed that The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild not only is continuing to sell well on Switch, which we all really knew because it's one of the top 4 titles, I believe, on Switch right now. But it is the 10th best-selling game released on a Nintendo platform in U.S. history. 10th overall. So all the systems that they've released is the 10th best-selling game. That's mighty impressive. Now I don't have the rest of the list. They didn't give that away. But it's a new game, and so you wouldn't think that it would be, you know, already a best-selling title on Nintendo platforms because they've had a lot, all right?
Yeah.
Especially during the Wii era, all right? Like, they had some really big sellers there, but this one's already gotten onto the top 10. That is mighty impressive.
Yeah, just to only imagine, like, it only in the short span ever since the Switch is released, that Breath of the Wild, like, highly regarded, and now is already making history as the top 10 selling game of all time in the U.S. Like, and what was the other games in comparison, Todd?
I just said I don't have a list.
okay.
I am the host. You will listen to me, dang it!
okay. But yeah, so it's just really just kind of amazing, like how the team of, like, again, Eiji Aonuma and the team just can make something so great, and just like, bam, it's already making history already. So it only gives me a very high hopes of, like, how Breath of the Wild 2 is gonna be. And of course, again, with Age of Calamity, that's basically the appetizer before the main course. So I can only imagine what the team is making up right now. So
I doubt Breath of the Wild 2 surpasses Breath of the Wild 1 in sales.
I don't know. I'd argue that it might because of the love of the original. This isn't like a Majora's Mask situation where it's, you know, tied to Ocarina, but it's a totally different game. This is a direct sequel. And so, you know, not unlike, say, like a Grand Theft Auto title, you know, hey, this one was great, but let's see what the next one is. I mean, no one expected Grand Theft Auto 5 to do as well as it did. It sold over 100 million copies, and 4 was no slouch. So it just depends on how good the game is, how many Switches are out, which, by, let's be generous, next year, 70 to 75 million. All it takes is like a 1 in 3-ish ratio, and all of a sudden, bam, that's a lot of units moving.
That's true, but I think the reason Breath of the Wild 1 has sold so well, I mean, outside of being a phenomenal, phenomenal game and a Zelda Obviously. Title, is because it, one, was a launch day title, so everybody was picking it up alongside their Switch, and two, it's just like, it's the clear cut, okay, I'm getting a Switch, what game do I need? I need Breath of the Wild. That's the first game that you think of. When you add Breath of the Wild 2 into the mix, now it becomes a little bit more cloudy, because do you want to buy the original, or do you want to buy the sequel? And I think that most people...
Yes.
are going to want to see the connected plot. So they you know, they maybe they buy both, but now you have a lot more to think about as well. The wheels aren't going to be as long on two as one, and I think generally sequels don't do as well as the original or original titles in this way. I'm trying to think of like Galaxy 2 versus Galaxy 1. I'm very
yeah,
confident
that's
Galaxy
a good example.
1 sold more.
That's a good, yeah, it definitely did sell more. But, actually, I don't know that. Let me look it up. All right, because I'm honestly curious, because Galaxy sold huge. I mean, I remember it selling incredibly well. All right.
The Galaxy 2 is, you know, irrelevant enough to not make it all me.
Here we go. By the end of March 2020, that's rather recent, Nintendo had sold 12.8 million copies. Really? That's a lot more than that. Okay, here we go. We got best-selling Wii ever.
Yeah, 12.8 million for Mario Galaxy and 7.4 million for Galaxy 2. That's kind of where my thought is on Breath of the Wild 2. It will sell phenomenally, but yeah. It will probably sell like two-thirds of what the original.
Yeah.
Which is like over 15 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously both games sold well, so it's not, you know, but these are some fascinating numbers, by the way. Listen to this. Wii Sports, 82 million. Those bundled for the console, though. Mario Kart Wii, 37 million. Wii Sports Resort, 33 million. Mario Brothers Wii, 30 million. Play, 28 million. Wii Fit, 22 million. Wii Fit Plus, 21 million. That's a small drop off.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Brawl was 13 million. Galaxy was 12. Wii Party, 9. Mario Part 8. Twilight Princess, 7.53. Mario and Sonic of the Olympic Games, 7.09. Mario and Sonic of the Olympic Games. The Winter Games, 6.53. Link's Crossbow Training, 5. This is just ridiculous. Just Dance 2 sold 5 million. How is that possible?
It's no wonder they kept releasing Just Dance for like 15 years on the Wii.
Oh, and
Twilight
like...
Princess to Skyward Sword is another interesting drop. That's 4 million.
Yeah. That was stunning, but that was also like late Wii versus like this is the beginning. So it's but then again after Breath or Skyward Sword, look at the jump between that and Breath of the Wild. So it's a lot of factors, but we'll just have to see how it all plays out. All right, but and then finally a small story that I wanted to touch on: Samurai Jack Battle Through Time. Again, I did enjoy the game. It just had a lot of flaws that I felt could have been rectified. However, the creator of the franchise and the game, Gennady Tartakovsky, however the heck you say it. Seriously, look it up. It's a really weird name. But he talked about why he came onto the project. And he said, there had been other Samurai Jack games in the past, and they were literally just cash grabs, just banking off of the franchise, and he didn't like that. So he literally, when he was approached by Adult Swim Games, he said, if you're going to do this as just, you know, shovelware and, you know, try to make a cash grab, I'm not going to be here for it. And they go, no, we're doing this, like, full tilt. We want to make it good. And so we got, you know, Soleil, you know, to make some good gameplay and everything else. Oh, okay. So he literally grabbed the writers of the series and goes, okay, we'll make the game for you. And I wish more people had that care. You know, because there are so many franchises, especially movie franchises, like, you know, like, I'm looking at you, comic book video games outside of, like, Arkham and Spider-Man and everything. Because how many, like, movie tie-ins have we seen that are just god-awful? All right. And you're like, how did Marvel or Disney or DC and Warner Brothers or, you know, whoever and whatever approve this crap? You know, and it's like, oh, they're trying to make money. There's better ways to make money. Because if you make a good game, that's what you call a franchise. Just look at Spider-Man. Just look at Arkham. You know, that sells. Like, making shovelware gets you probably a little bit of money, but eventually people are just going to stop getting it. You notice that there wasn't an Avengers Endgame movie tie-in or something like that? So, like, come on, guys. Be like Gennady and take some care and say, if you're going to make a crap, I'm not going to be part of this. That should be like the beginning of all negotiations. Like, think of how many. Yeah, how many less shovelware games would we have if all publishers had that mindset? If it's going to be crap, let's not make it. To dream.
You can probably see it's like Nintendo or like really other developers. But again, corporate minds, corporate hives, they just want that moolah. It's kind of the same.
It honestly bothers me because, again, in a past life, I was a game tester, and I technically still am. But there are games that I'll test in both past and present, and I'm like, oh, this is such a great game. Like, I remember talking to my boss at times. Like, I'll give you a great example. There's a game out there right now called Azura Saga Pathfinder. It's on consoles and Steam, and I think it just came out on iOS. And that game, top to bottom, magnificent. Like, great RPG. It was like, it had a hand-drawn art style, a really great story, great combat mechanics, so on and so forth. Like, that game was beautiful. I loved playing that game. Like, and I would have to play it for like 2 hours at a burst because of how long it was. It was great. And I loved every time I got to play it. And then, like, there's other times, like, what's one that's not under NDA? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But there were some games that I played, and they were just absolute crap. And I would like, wait, we have to play this game again? Why? No, seriously, it was that bad. Okay, there was one. I think that it came out. It's called. I'll call it GS. Let's just call it just to cover my bases. It's called GS, and this game was so bad. It looked bad, played bad. I had no idea what was going on, and it was just like every time we played it, I hated playing it. It was that bad. But, and I'm like, how are they releasing this? It's not ready. And then there were other games that were just on that level. And we all have seen like the games for Xbox, Sony, and Nintendo that get like, you know, 1-star reviews or 2 out of 5s, and you know, like are like dead in the middle of the road. And you're like, why would they, you know, stop here? Take the time, make the game better, and at least have a shot. You know, like, why would you make, you know, what was that trucking game, like Road to Redemption or something like that? You know, like that one's like always said as being horrible. Or I remember like the original Xbox had like Jake and the 99 Dragons or something like that. And like that game was god awful. And like on and on and on. Why would you release these games if they weren't good? I literally can't wrap my head around that. Both as a gamer and as a former QA tester, because I would be writing bugs up to like to the launch days, like, you haven't fixed this yet. Why are you releasing it? Ugh. And again, we're citing Nintendo. Nintendo's done some bad games in the past, both first party and third party. All right, so they're not off the hook here. We're encapsulating all of this. I mean, is it too much to ask for a good game? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Shout out to the corporate hive mind up top.
Just wait till I'm president. I'm gonna make it I'll make an executive order. All video games have to be good.
Or at least pass a certain quality. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll offer my services as game tester. You know what better QA tester than the president? You know, it's that's money. It's like I am President Todd Black, and I approve this video game. You're welcome. See? Money. And y'all think, oh yeah, Todd is president. I 8 years. I would do it in the next term, but I have to be 35, and I turn 35 on election day in 2024. So, yeah, I have to wait a little bit. But 2028, I am running for president. You're welcome. I will make America fro again. I was going to say Todd again, but that doesn't really work. But fro again. That's going to work. And then, of course, my other slogan is, I'm going to save the world fro sure.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank
I
you.
Like it.
I think. I'm counting on your vote. I told that to my sister. I'm like, I'm going to run for president. She looks at me and goes, I don't have to vote for you, do I? I'm like, no. She goes, I'm kidding. I'll vote for you. It's like, no, if you don't want to vote for me, don't vote for me. That's the whole point. You know?
I've got to earn it.
Yeah, exactly. I got to earn it. I mean, if you don't believe in what I'm telling you, and I honestly do have a plan for what I would do as president, but if you don't believe in the plan, don't vote for me. I mean, I don't want to force your votes. Who do you think I am, Trump? So, Moving on. We went from Samurai Jack to bad video games to me being president. That's just how our podcast works sometimes. All right, so for our main event, we're doing something a little bit different. As I noted in my what I've been playing, we are going to get a new couple of heroes and Fire Emblem heroes, and one of them is just one of my absolute favorite characters of all time. Like, she is a supporting character. You honestly don't even have to touch her if you don't want to. But when you develop her story, she just becomes so freaking awesome, and I love her to death. So what we're going to talk about today is characters in games that moved us in one way or another, and we were surprised by their character backstories, and so we're going to do this in a Nintendo discussion. Alright, so I'll go first just to kick this all off. The character that I will be talking about is Jill from Fire Emblem Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. And the reason I like Jill is because when you meet her, it's in a level of the game where you're trying to get to a boat to escape a bunch of Dane soldiers. And she flies in and she wants to kill you. Like, she's loyal to Ashnard and the Kingdom of Dane. And she really hates the Lagus, so much so that she uses the slur known as subhuman. And she was raised all her life to value Bjork, human, life, and to hate the Lagus / subhumans. And so when you meet her, it's, you know, she's full on, full tilt, I am loyal to the Empire. And then over time, then when she basically disobeys orders and comes to find you because she wants to bring you in herself, and she realizes that, oh, these humans are about to get killed by Lagus. I guess I should go help them. And then they're like, we don't want your help. You hate the Lagus. And she's like, it doesn't matter. We're on the same side. I will fight with you and blah, blah, blah. And she's just, again, full tilt evil. She honestly, she's a racist, for lack of a better.
She joined you because she wants to kill the crow Lagus. She,
exactly.
And Ike's like, I don't want you here. If this is why you're here, and she's like, I don't care if you don't want me here, I'm gonna kill some Lagus.
Yep, that's her. That was her. That's Jill to a T. And but then when you develop her, support conversations with Laith, the cat Lagus, you see her transformation. It's honestly rather beautiful. At first, she doesn't even know what to say to Laith. She is like scared to death, and just trying to understand how these humans and Lagus can, Bjork and Lagus can work together. And over time, you know, Laith gets this begrudging respect for her, and she starts telling about all the horrors that the humans have done to her and her people and everything. And you start to see, like, wait a minute, this isn't what I was told. This isn't what I was trained to believe in regards to Lagus. And by the time you get to their A conversations, Laith and Jill have kind of formed a friendship, and they shake hands, which is of course a very big deal. And then she willingly goes up against her father because Ike and everybody in their relationship with Lagus has changed her perspective, and her father is glad. You know, we find out that her father just was kind of forced to train her this way because of Ashnard, and he's glad that she is free of basically the Dane mind control and their racist views on things. And then by the time you get to Radiant Dawn, she's just as good, and you know, she's friend to all Lagus. She's trying to, you know, fight for equality for all, and it's just this really great transformation just done through support conversations and like one story mission. And you go from this very evil racist girl who thinks she knows everything to, my gosh, I've been raised wrong my whole life and I'm so sorry. And that was really beautiful to me, and so I will always have a soft spot for Jill. And I will, even though I'm going to go for all the characters in the banner, I am definitely going to go for Jill the hardest because I really like her.
Jill is definitely the standout character, one of the standout characters in that game. She's probably my favorite. And there are like two subtle things that I wanted to add. First is, after you defeat the Crow Lagus, she stays in your party. And it seems odd as the player because you're like, okay, we did it. Like, why is she still here? Should we be killing her now? And Ike asks her this. He's like, why are you still here? You know, like, you're free to go. We're not going to keep you as a prisoner. And she admits that she wants to watch and see. She's like trying to learn, because just through her initial experience, she begins to feel maybe there's more here. When you first meet her, you're out in the middle of the ocean. So she's just trapped on this boat with you and with the Lagoos, with Ike and with the Lagoos. And she starts to see maybe things aren't exactly right there. So that just initial curiosity kind of shows that she, even though she's young, she does have an open mind, even in that like dark origin that she comes from, you know, being fed these lies. And then the second is Fire Emblem Until Three Houses didn't really do like player choice stuff. It just wasn't really a thing. You know, there are very few instances where what you do impacts the game. And Jill has this other subplot that is really interesting. It's loyalty versus, I guess, her sense of justice. Because in Path of Radiance, when she fights her father, that chapter, there's this big buildup, and she knows that he's going to be there. And Ike is like, oh, I should probably just leave her at home, you know? No need to make her go fight her dad. That'd be pretty jacked up. But, of course, if she's your best unit, like she usually is because she's a beast, you can send her out there anyway. And if you do, and you have her fight her father, you can have her talk to him. You can just fight, and then she'll just battle him. But you can also have him have her talk to him. And if you do that, he convinces her to turn, and she rejoins the Dayan army. And then you have to defeat her there, because she's like, my dad, I see now he always knew what was right, but I have to fight with him. I can't betray him. At the same time, if you have an S or an A support with Leth and her, or with Mist and her, you can actually talk to her when she turns with them and turn her back. So there's like a ton of secret conversations you can have there. And in Radiant Dawn, it's sort of the same thing. So she starts out on the Dayan army side, and you can have her join the Grail mercenaries if you want. She can rejoin Ike's army, or she can stay with Micaiah and fight for her country. So it's because Ike is going up against Dayan in that game. So you can kind of determine what she values more. And I think both ways they handle that are done really, really well. She's a super well-written character, and yeah, I love her a lot.
The irony for me was that when I played Jill in Path of Radiance, she was, like you said, like one of my boss characters. And yet when I played her in Radiant Dawn, for whatever reason, she just wasn't as strong. And so Har became, who also is a great character, obviously, but Har was my super epic wyvern rider character. I just found that hilarious.
Yeah,
and then their relationship was odd.
they had a that was definitely one of my her relationships with other characters are great. Har's like her immediate commander. He's the guy who actually like lets her go on her mission to track you down in the beginning of Path of Radiance. He's just too lazy to fly after. She was really good in Radiant Dawn. Har is just like phenomenal, fresh out the box. But I still preferred Jill.
I gave him Irvan at the end because I'm like I needed someone with an axe, and I had Grail's axe. I'm like, give it to Har.
Nice.
He was a boss. So. All right, Tyler. What about you? What character moved you in terms of their story?
I am going to go with a recent title. So spoiler alert for Paper Mario and the Origami King, because when you think of surprise characters, I think of Bobby the Bob-Omb, because when I first saw this character, I was like, are you kidding me? Once again, you know, Paper Mario is not doing cool character designs. Is this character is going to be lame, forgettable, etc. And much like Origami King surprised me, so did Bobby the Baba. Because you first meet him, and it's just like every other character in the game. He has some funny lines. He asks if he can join your party. And first, Olivia asks him to join your party, and at first he's like, no, I just be dead weight. And Olivia's like, no, you know, you should join us, right, Mario? And you could say yes, or you could say no. And if you say no, he's like, I kind of do want to join your party, though. You know, like, is that okay? Can I join your party? You could say no again, and he'll just keep begging you until eventually you have to let him join. So there's some funny dialogue, but he takes advantage of the fact that Origami King doesn't have crazy character designs, because, and here's where the spoiler comes in. I'm going to give you a second here. Okay. Bobby the Bob-Omb commits suicide to save Olivia, and it is the most intense scene. It's hilarious in like because it's a Nintendo game, and yet they have this character make the sacrifice. So here's how it all goes down. Bobby has no memory when you meet him. He's an amnesiac, and he tags along with you with the hopes of finding some memories. And he's just doing his thing, being a Bob. He doesn't have a fuse, so he can't really blow up. He just like occasionally rams into stuff in combat. He's just a regular dude. But the more you adventure with him, the more you kind of start to feel for him. He gets lost a few times, some silly classic antics. He takes some funny pictures with you in Shogun World. He has some funny more lines there. You kind of like the guy. He's a nice character. But Olivia, after you beat Shogun World, gets crushed by a boulder from the boss of the game, Ollie. And she's trapped. You need to find a way to blow up this boulder. And Bobby says he has an idea. He's got this plan to go do that. I forget where he gets his memory back, but his memory comes back at some point in that second chapter. And he remembers that on this, the SS Princess Peach, there's an extra fuse that he can use. So he doesn't tell Mario this. You just go to the SS Princess Peach, you find it like just totally attacked and covered in ink. This blooper attacked the boat. Bobby reveals that that's how he lost his memory. This blooper attacked the boat, killed all of his Bob friends, and knocked him unconscious and knocked his fuse off. But his fuse is somewhere, or there is a fuse somewhere on the boat. So you find the fuse, and it turns out that the fuse is Bobby's fallen best friend's fuse.
So
you get this fuse, you bring it back, and like you, the player, like kind of like, I know what's going to happen here. You know, he's got to put on the fuse. He's going to blow up the thing. And just like every other character in you know, Paper Mario, like Bobbery can blow up. He just comes back just fine. He's just going to be just fine. But then he puts on the fuse and you notice it doesn't look like a normal Bob fuse. Like they're normally brown. His is like white. And it's like, okay, this is looking like something's a little fishy here. He starts giving this speech, right? And Bobby gives a speech where he says, I'm going to do what every Bob wants to do, make an impact.
And
the eyes just start welling up. You're like, he just wants to make an impact. He's just like, this is just a Bob, you know? This is just a minion of Bowser. Just like, he's a regular dude. All he wants to do is make an impact to save Olivia. He loves Mario. He loves Olivia. They're his best friends. And he lights his fuse, blows up. And he doesn't come back. He blows up. And he's gone. Bob is gone from the game. He dies. And like Olivia like comes out of the rock and is like, oh, thank you so much for saving Mario. Where's Bobby? Where'd Bobby go? And like Mario's like looking at the ground like, he's gone. and it's like, I'm laughing because it was incredibly impactful. Like it was so... Like I said in the beginning of the soliloquy, the part that made it so amazing was actually that Bobby was not like Bobbery or Bombette. He was just a Bob. He was just a regular old Bob doing his thing. And in this moment, he knew he could make an impact. And just like there was something beautiful about that, this just ordinary minion willing to make this sacrifice to save his friends. Like Paper Mario has always done a great job of that, like giving Bowser's minions and like just giving you like a day in the life. Like the Goombas that ambush you always say something stupid about how Mario jumps on them all the time, and it's always funny, nice little fourth wall break. But in this case, they didn't really play it for laughs. Like this was a really sad moment. Like Mario like runs after him to make him stop when he's about to blow up, and like he just does it, man. He just does it. It was wild. It was one of the most shocking moments of my gaming past in the entire Switch. Like, I don't want to say of all time, but it was up there. I was shocked. I didn't expect this. And like, there's a scene afterwards. Olivia's like depressed about it. Like, things get really dark and really heavy. And like, I did not expect that in this Paper Mario game. And that was just one of the many ways that it surprised me. A lot of the characters in this game had surprising depth, but Bobby was number one.
Okay, I got two things to say. One's a pun, and one's an angering thought. Remember the producer said that the reason that they were doing things like they were, like with Origami King, is that they didn't want to do complicated stories anymore. And yet that you just told us a story of a bomb who just committed suicide.
I'm
sorry, that's complicated.
Yeah. Right?
And that's not something that you would have in like an age appropriate game per se, because again, he didn't come back. So he literally committed seppuku to save his friend. And like that's infinitely complicated, and that kind of ticks me off, because like I would expect that from a Paper Mario game, because they have gone that deep before, like when we thought that Bobbery died, and you know the abuse that Vivian took from the Siren Sisters and everything. You know, I would expect that, and I was feeling your emotion, Tyler, when you were telling the story, and I'm like, I would be interested in seeing that. And that just makes me sad that, you know, they said, we don't want to do complicated stories, and yet they have this. So, like, which is it?
Right. The hypocrisy.
Like, what do you want here, man?
That's the thing. That's why it's really difficult for me to figure out exactly what they're thinking with the Paper Mario series, because this game does have a lot. Like, that's the peak. That's, like, the best moment in the game for sure. But, like, there's a lot of characters that have similar depth like that, and it's weird that Nintendo's like embarrassed about that. And the other examples that you gave are like great examples of Paper Mario doing that right. This one, I think for me, it was more effective because, you know, the Vivian thing, you could read into it, but it just felt like, you know, bullying, you know, like it was sad and you really felt for her. And she's an unbelievable character. Definitely my favorite partner ever, besides maybe Bobby. But she's phenomenal. And like Bobbery is the same thing. But with Bobbery, he came back. Yeah. You know, and with Vivian, like, you know, she like overcame the ops, like, you know, she joined your team and then her sisters and her get along in the end. Like, this was like a very final, like, yeah. It was shocking. Yeah. It was genuinely stunning moment.
So overall, you're saying that this story didn't bomb.
Yeah, I think I could probably explain like the reasoning behind that as well, because like with like Bobbery and Vivian, like those two, I think a lot of people can pretty much say this, they had plot armor, because like obviously you can't really try to kill off a supporting character like that, because one, they are unique, they are like, you thought Bobbery died, but of course they just have plot armor, they have partners for you, they can't die. But we're going to like Origami Kingdom with Bob, like it's just like it is a basic bomb, like there is nothing unique about it, but as he said in his final words, like he wants to make an impact, like with all what all bombs want to do. And I think like they also said, like there was also another bomb who kind of said the same thing as well in that same spirit, like, yeah, we're just simple bombs, we're just like here to make an impact, it's just our job. And like that's kind of like the thing that kind of separates it. While Bobbery had like plot armor to help him, because again, he comes back, he kills so many times, but he doesn't quote unquote die. For Bob in Origami King, he just dies flat out, and like that kind of like it hits right there. He does not have plot armor. He dies, and no, that's gonna bring him back, which kind of strikes up even more, because like you expect Mario games to be like very wholehearted, lighter. Aside from like with Thousand Year Door, but with Origami King, like, yeah, they're kind of like playing like not all characters have plot armor, and yeah, they're not gonna live. So I think that's kind of like what separates this game kind of differently from Thousand Year Door.
All right, Will, what's your character?
Mine's gonna be a little bit of a simple thing. Like, if there's any one sort of deep character, it would be of a recent game, and it's kind of a simple concept. For me, I'm kind of like piggybacking off Utah. Like, I'm gonna go recent. It's gonna be with Fire Emblem Three Houses, and it's a simple example. But I gotta say, it's gotta be Edelgard, honestly.
Here we go.
Like, it again. It's a very simple concept, and like that's one thing I really am intrigued about Edelgard. Like, a lot, as you many know, and spoilers, obviously, if you haven't played the game, like Edelgard is the Flame Emperor and is perceived as the villain of the story of the entire Three Houses. But when you play the Black Eagle run, she is basically perceived as the hero, which again, that's kind of the one thing I really do like about Three Houses, is the play on perspective. And like it's very also very applicable in real life as well. Like, she truly believes, like, again, wants to banish this entire system of the Crest system, because like she detests the idea that like, one's worth is based on birth or the ability of Crest, where everyone gets tossed aside like yesterday's trash. So she wants to do away with that. And yes, of course, like there are, of course, the whole, like, does the end justify the means? Well, according to the whole, like, doing this whole almost total authoritarian way of, like, I don't know, like hurting more humans in order to achieve her goal. I mean, again, like, there's always that ongoing debate of, like, again, does the end justify the means? But again, once you play in that role, again, supporting Edelgard, once you, like, see her, like, reasoning, she truly believes she is the hero of her own story, as will pretty much, again, all of us. Like, of course, with, like, Dimitri, Claude, everybody else, all the supporting cast, like, they themselves believe they are the hero of their own story. So what makes them any different from Edelgard? Like, sure, of course, the actions they do, we're going to how you justify it. Like, you truly believe that you are doing the greater good and everyone else is perceived, quote-unquote, evil. But Edelgard, she truly believes that she was doing for the goodness of it all. And, of course, naturally, once you finish the Crimson Flower run, like, she achieves that goal does go against those who slither in the dark and creates a system that she wanted to. Like, she finally banished up that old conservative ways of Crests and finally, like, makes a society, an empire that one is based on one's action, not based on birth or Crest ability. So it's just really kind of a, like, that's one thing I like about the development of this game. Like, what is he truly evil or is he truly not? That can be forever be debated, which that's one thing I really do like about Edelgard. Like, they blindsided the fact that you are helping the quote-unquote villain, but is she truly the villain? It can be forever be debated. And, like, of course, with the other two runs, other three runs of, like, the snow run, everybody else, it just, they perceive her as the villain. And because, again, they themselves, Claude believes he's the hero, that Dimitri believes he's the hero, and just, like, it's just a play on perspectives. But why I believe that Edelgard is the one best, because, again, you are essentially, quote unquote, helping the villain, but in the fact that she may be indeed the hero, it's just, like, that play on perspective, I just really am so intrigued with it. So for me, I feel like Edelgard is definitely one that has, like, such great development, in my opinion.
Tyler will happily debate that she's evil, right, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, you know I will, but yeah. I will try not to. I will refrain. I agree with you, though. I mean, Edelgard is definitely a really well-written character. I think all the lords are incredibly well-written, and Three Houses and just in general is a thought-provoking game. I think the most surprising character to me is Ferdinand or Lawrence in that game in terms of, like, surprising depth. But
I would go someone like Dorothea.
Yeah, but, like, Dorothea, you kind of expect her to have depth, right?
It's more than that, because when we meet her, she's literally, like, flirting with everyone. And even in your her like, C conversation, she's, like, offering herself to you and you say yes, and she's like, wait, you do want that? And then you talk with, like, certain people and, you know, you find out that the reason she's trying to be well off is because she doesn't want to go back to, you know, being a pauper on the street and having to bathe in, the public fountain, which is where she met Ferdy and everything, and, you know, getting all the dirty looks because, oh, she has favor with these lords and she used that to get into the academy. She's trying to prove herself while also, you know, trying to find that true love if she can. And I find a lot of depth in that.
No, you're right. There is a lot of depth in that. I guess that's true. I think really every character in that game has a surprising amount of depth outside of maybe Ignatz and Raphael. But
definitely don't like Raphael. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he's fine. Just not as interesting as the other characters. Yeah, but you're right. Edelgard, seeing both perspectives and, like, facing her in most of the route as, like, a primary antagonist and then being able to play on her side in the Crimson Flower route definitely does make you question, you know, the morality of things. I think that Verdant Wind is pretty cut and dry. There's not a ton of complexity there, but Azure Moon is also a similar way. Matt, like you said, Dimitri thinks of himself as the hero. That's the only thing you said that I really disagree with. Like, he does not think of himself as the hero.
Not at first, anyway. Like,
I don't think he ever really does.
Well, you know? he doesn't think of himself as a pure hero, but By the end, he has come to the realization that he needs to be heroic enough to lead and to atone for what he has done. And there is a heroism in that. But
right. Yeah, thank you for the clarification. Yeah, like he was like, I remember like Chris Hackney's interview in Anime Impulse. Like, yeah, it felt like that uncertainty. Like again, how he leads. Yeah, granted. Yes.
So. But of course, there are so many other characters that we could not talk about in this one podcast. So let us know who your favorite characters that had surprising amounts of depth or had a memorable scene or a memorable death, like Bobby the Bob-omb. And we'll talk about ones that you have mentioned next week if we have time. And next week is our 200th episode.
Wow.
Somehow. So we are going to try and reach out to our extended family to have a little bit of fun. And if it's just us three kings of Nintendo attire, we will have fun by ourselves. I think we're capable of that. So definitely come back for next week. We will be having, barring a major news event, we will be just having another one of our fun podcasts to just, you know, relax and do Nintendo things. So
and also just a quick... Sorry. I just want to say, if anyone is going to be picking up 3D All-Stars as well, just good luck, because last I checked, all stores are pretty much sold out, as I remember.
If you're in Huntersville, North Carolina, the GameStop has copies. Good news.
There you go. So, and with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we asked you to grade Nintendo's 20. I was looking for the poll, so I hung on to my words. We asked you to grade Nintendo's 20 so far, and 16% of you said an A, 32% of you said B, 38% said C, and 14% said F. We did not make D a choice, so I'm going to imagine C and D were kind of lumped in together, as were Fs. But yeah, that I agree. I think that's probably pretty fair.
All right, and I don't think we really need a poll question unless we want to have them grade the direct mini. What do you think?
Nah, we're right.
We'll
save it. We can take a break. We'll take
a break. So again, let us know what you thought. Let us know what you thought of the Nintendo Direct Mini. Were you happy with the overall results? What games do you think you're going to buy, and what ones do you hope are announced in the next Direct Mini Partner Showcase that we all know we're going to get soon? Are you sad about the superficial death of the 3DS? Are you surprised by the Breath of the Wild sales? And of course, again, what are your favorite characters that had surprising story depth? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Tellius, Tyler, and Wario Will, I am Triforce Tyler, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We have made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag!